Welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C. This half hour is presented by the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, who is responsible for the information and opinions expressed during the show.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Thanks so much for hanging out with us this morning. I am joined by the Escambia County Sheriff's Office this morning. We have Amber Southard, who you know and love, is here all the time with us. And we also have Sergeant Hendershot. And thank you so much for joining this morning. It's nice to have you both.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. We appreciate it. We love coming in here and getting to see you and talking to people. And we're so happy to be back in the studio and back on Facebook Live. And it's just, I know people are just so excited that certain things are just happening again, and it's so nice to be out and about. And when I was talking about the radio show the other day, Sergeant Hendershot was like, yes, I want to come on. I want to talk to everybody. I want to be on there. And I said, great. We'll make that happen.
So
he's here today, and he is the sergeant over our training division. And so I know we get a lot of questions a lot of time about training, and it's not just our sworn, it's also our civilians that have to go through training. So I guess we'll kind of start up with what he does, and then what kind of training is expected from both sworn and civilian.
So it's pretty entailed. There are a certain amount of standards that we have to follow to keep certification for our officers. On the civilian side, it's more of a career progression, so that we have to follow a certain amount of hours in order for them to build, hopefully for a promotion in the next step. Our officers, the FDLE sets a set of requirements that, you know, with certain types of training that have to be done and completed in a four-year cycle, that include firearms, human diversity training, traffic stops, all the autism, human trafficking, things of that nature. But since we're accredited, our agency has always, since I've been here, has always been one step above. So to do that, like once every 4 years per FDLE standards to qualify with a firearm, we do twice annually. In addition to that, we usually run online training as well. We will bring in outside training for specialty stuff, such as interviews, interrogations, things of that nature. Leadership courses for new supervisors and current supervisors, conflict de-escalation, which seems to be a pretty hot topic right now. Things like that will enable us to be a better agency. But we'll probably have between 4 and 6 blocks of that. Our standard stuff, the range stuff, everything from defensive tactics to.
Yeah, so you're not always just in a classroom. Like, you're putting them through real-life experiences. It's our training building is so awesome. If you've never been over there as a civilian, you get a chance to actually see it. If you want to join our Citizens Law Enforcement Academy, hopefully, you know, I'll be making an announcement hopefully soon that we'll be starting those up again. I think we're just like everybody else in the nation, just kind of waiting to see what happens. But hopefully when those get started back up again, we'll start getting the civilians through and they can actually see it. But one of the cool things about that room is the active shooter training that they can kind of go through. And it's like a video screen, but it does real life scenarios that officers have actually been through.
The big thing for that is it's one thing to sit in front of a PowerPoint and, you know, that kind of thing and learn something, as opposed to what we're trying to gauge and build is the reaction when people are under stress. How are you really going to respond? Those are the areas that we either need to reinforce or correct. So anytime we get that opportunity, that's what we've tried to do. So defensive tactics is hands-on in that way. The use of, you know, taser recertification, which is annually per, you know, state statute. There are so many different facets of what we do. But as you had mentioned, our training building, in our training building alone, I would encourage anybody, highly recommend our Citizens Law Enforcement Academy, because you get to see so much. And there's only, we had talked before this even started, there's just so much, only so much I can explain to you. But when you see it, you understand. So one of the big things that Amber had mentioned was the active shooter. We have a force-on-force room with movable walls. I can recreate any scenario. I can set up a building, a hallway, a school, and we can do some active shooter training. That's part of our CALEA presentation. The Sheriff's Office has purchased and we utilize a driving simulator. that is full motion, the whole nine yards. The only thing that's rough, I don't care for it because it's actually very motion-based.
It is.
Oh, no, really?
There's a bucket in there for a reason.
It's a little too real.
And then we have our shooting simulator and then, you know, all the other stuff that we do. But it's very hands-on, and we encourage that for our officers, and we're trying to – I don't want to say change direction, but allow our officers and our training unit to expand what we currently do.
And Ruthie, whenever we get started back, we would love for you to join our Citizens Law Enforcement Academy. And
I can't wait.
Take it. It is. If you've ever had any kind of questions about law enforcement, that's your opportunity. You get to sit down with each division and they go over everything that they do, from homicide to crime scene to training to the SROs come in to, you get to meet the canines, you get to meet the mounted unit, so a little bit of everything each time you come. And it's just so neat to actually get to sit down and ask those questions face to face, and we love having that kind of interaction with the community, so we definitely want you to come and take it, and we can talk about it then on the radio.
Absolutely. I know we've been talking about it, and of course, like you mentioned, we're waiting for it to be safe, like we're not bringing it back till it's okay. But when it does come back, I'm gonna be first in line. Well, actually, I don't know. There might already be a line. I know a lot of people
there is a waiting
were
list.
Very interested.
There's a waiting list, but we'll definitely get you added to it in the way. I also want to remind people, we're on Facebook Live right now. So if you have any questions or comments, just want to say hi, you can drop it down there in the section. Sergeant Hendershot and myself will try to respond to you the best we can. They can also call, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can call or text here to the station, which is 850-437-1620.
And we do have a comment, Jennifer. Yes, we miss seeing you guys at the events too. Jennifer and her daughter, we call her daughter lovingly Scooby. Love Scooby. Nice. And we love seeing them at our events. And we really do hope to get those, you know, started up again. So thanks for watching this. And yes, tell Scooby we said hello.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It's pretty interesting because we teach those. And I've been in several separate divisions that have allowed me, you know, for one of the things I did is trying to make it as interactive as possible so people actually get the true meaning and understand of what we do. So when I was in homicide, I actually took a case and we kind of course changed. But we did a briefing the first part of the segment that we had when I was in robbery and homicide and explained the division and how it worked. And then we actually took a case and then I allowed and guided the audience members through an actual, hey, here's what you can do, here's our limitations, and everybody had ideas because, you know, what the general public knows about what we can and cannot do is usually based through one of three shows, First 48, right? Cops, or live TV, right? Yeah. I mean, those are,
CSI,
and it's just...
CSI is always one where we're like, okay, we're not going to get this solved in the, you know, hour allotted for the showtime.
It is nowhere near. But, you know, there's just a lot that goes into it. So if you get the opportunity to do that, I know there's a waiting list, but we have so many repeat people that you will see for the third, fourth, and fifth time that just come back.
So
they just can't get, you know.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that was allowed. You can have an encore.
We try to get everybody going through one time. Yeah. So we'll push them back on a waiting list until we can get everybody through for their first time. But if we do have some open spots and it's a repeat person and they want to come, of course, we always, you know, welcome them. There's just so much to learn. And there's so much to do that I think they all pick up something different each time they come. Or they'll say, oh, you know what? I wish I'd have asked Sergeant Hendershot that one question I was thinking about. Hopefully he's there this next time and we can discuss it. And like when he was in homicide, it was him and Amber Bernard, who's moved on to a different agency from us. We miss her so much.
Yes,
but,
we do.
It was very eye-opening, the case that they walked through, because it was a real case that we had at the Escambia County Sheriff's Office and how it was solved. So you, as an audience member sitting in Citizen Law Enforcement Academy, get the same information they got when they showed up to the scene.
Wow.
So it's kind of you get to see the same pictures, exactly what they were seeing in real time, and the same bits of information as it trickled in. So you get to kind of work with them and figure out this case. So it gives you an actual understanding on how it has to develop on the homicide investigation side of it. And there's so many just different roles that people have to play in those situations. So it is just so eye-opening and so nice. And what I really like is when we get to go to the training building and like we were talking about all the stuff there, it's so easy for us to be watching the news or YouTube clip over and over again and say, I would have done this. We've all done it.
Armchair quarterbacking. It's really easy sitting at home.
But when they actually kind of put you through it, you should see the people. We've got them up on our YouTube channel, video of them wearing, we put the GoPro on them and, you know, send them through stuff.
Yes.
And we interview them after, and it's, you know, they have those split seconds that they have to make a decision on certain things, whether it's to shoot, to not shoot, to use this, to not use this, to use your voice. You know, it's all these different decisions. And they'll ask them the simplest question after the scenario. What was that person wearing? I don't remember.
Not got a clue.
What color shirt did they have on? I don't know. So, and it just kind of shows how adrenaline and everything else can affect those split-second decisions. So not only is it going to give you a little bit more of appreciation, but it gives you more of an understanding, too. So I do like the eye-opening aspect to what it can do.
Very cool.
Yeah. We have, when we do that, you know, the other thing we do is I have a bunch of usually pretty recent videos that involved, you know, use of force is never pretty. It's not something that, you know, unfortunately, you know, is part of the job. But, you know, we look at some of those, and when you look at it one way, or you're told or a certain, based on community, personal beliefs, or whatever else that influence some of those decisions, we're able to take some of those hot topics and some of those hot videos and then at least put another spin on it to where we get all the facts. And, you know, there are certain biological things that happen in use of force, you know, because we all talk about fight or flight, right? That's the big thing with adrenaline. But, you know, there's also a freeze where people just lock up. You know, there's a whole mental aspect that comes along with all of it that really, once you kind of understand, you'll see a lot of people that have, and this is, you know, my favorite part of it, especially now being in training, is they have one specific mindset when they're in there, and then you watch them turn the fence, and it was like, you know, I never really thought of it that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very good outreach tool, and I highly encourage anybody who has questions about law enforcement, pro or con, come in and let's talk about it.
We're getting some questions on Facebook. Yes, thanks guys for the thumbs up. We appreciate you watching. Carlos, so he was in our last Citizen Law Enforcement Academy that unfortunately due to COVID we had to kind of shut down right at the beginning and didn't get to finish. Yes, you guys are going to be moved right to the front. We want to finish that course with you guys. So as soon, just keep listening here. We'll put it out on our social media. We'll have David Craig contact you guys because he has all of your contact information, and you will know when we're able to start back up again. And we're hoping to get you guys through first because you were in the class that unfortunately got shut down in the middle of.
Well, the hard part for us too is yes, you know, you look at things like that, but a lot of our community outreach was shut down. Our training had to be highly altered just because
I know I was signed up for a training course and was kind of excited to take it. It was a driver's training.
Yes.
And I was like, this is going to be fun. And it, you know, the week before, I think it was like, oh, well, because of COVID, we've got to, you know, kind of back off on that. But we have found other ways to go about it, which has been really neat and interesting. So we evolve the best way we can, like everybody else has, and what we're dealing with in society.
Definitely. And it sounds like between the simulators and the hands-on training and giving just citizens the back-end view of just understanding a day in the life almost, you know, really, truly a snapshot, but a real snapshot, a very realistic preview of, like, this is what it actually is like to live through this. Is just, I think, so I'm just thinking of how much this contributes to our understanding as a community of all of us, you know, what it takes to be in this role all day every day and what we think we know about it. And I love what you said, Sergeant, about that mind shift happening. You get to see that in the training. So very just good work being done. And, you know, like you said, Amber, we've had to pivot. Everyone's had to change. Like we're dealing with it the best that we can.
It is what it is, but work with us, and we're getting it figured out the best we can, like everybody else. And we're hoping to start bringing these programs back, guys. We miss it so much. And the community outreach stuff, we really miss, you know, having our programs that we're able to be out there. And we're still doing some, like we just did one not too long ago where we were able to do the drive-through kind of aspect of National Night Out. Normally National Night Out is such a big deal, and we get out there in the community and we're handing things out and we're walking around and there's booths that everybody can visit, and it's like a little fall festival. It's so much fun. With COVID, we knew we weren't going to be able to do that. So we altered it the best we could, and we did a drive through aspect of it. So people were able to drive through. We had backpacks ready with school supplies. We had bags ready with food to donate to the family. So when they drove up, we were just kind of able to wear a mask, hand it to them through the window, and you know they could get going. So we're trying, and we're working on different ways to bring some of these back. But some of them are just so hard to do if you can't have that interaction.
It's true. It really is very different. And I imagine with your training, I know we were saying that even with the training courses offered or the different parts and pieces, how's that looking now?
You know, they're starting to open up. For the first time in a while, we've allowed some courses to continue. Yeah. Obviously, we had several that were set up that people were signed up for, such as Amber herself, that we had to cancel. But a lot of those outside classes have relaxed a little. And so we're using all the CDC guidelines, practicing our social distancing and mask, and we have temperature scanners on the door and, you know, all of those things to take every precaution that we can. At the end of the day, it's going to be up to the individual, you know, and what your preference is, whether or not you want to participate. But, you know, we're trying to get back to some normalcy, like, you know, I'm sure everybody else is, you know, your whole audience. It's what everybody wants. It's what everybody needs. But unfortunately, in this time, until this thing breaks, you know, we're kind of stuck.
It is. But yeah, so it really hasn't affected the training the deputies are getting. When they're coming in, they're still getting the same exact. It's more or less affecting the training that I'm getting, but it's okay. I'll deal with it. Just kidding.
But as we just spoke about it today, because I have, you know, in the office, you know, Deputy Coach, Jenna Coach. She's been a big pushing force and driving force.
She's amazing. I took a course with her last year, right before everything, you know, started to shut down, and she's a jam up teacher.
Well, she went because you have to have so many hours, like we talked about. You know, it's a minimum of 10 for the civilians. So her and Investigator Higginbotham from the they are putting together a course to get that last 2 hours to make sure all our civilians will achieve their 10-hour goal for career progression. So, you know, and she's been a big driving force behind our cadet program. She's just, you know, she's worth her weight in gold.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We're getting some more comments on there. Bonnie said she moved to Pensacola last year, and she wants to give a big thanks to the Sheriff's Department for their protection. Thanks, Bonnie, for the comment. We appreciate that. Jennifer says she just loves that we're doing this and showing people situations that they could react to. And so we're hoping to get the programs back and going, like we're saying, and get back to what we love doing best. But for now, we're just going to educate the best we can and talk about what we can.
And you know, I think the biggest part of that is, you know, we don't set out to, you know, to push any message or anything else. You know, it's just the availability for us to give you the cool the proper tools. And you said the key word yourself, educate. I'm not here to formulate decisions for you, but I want to show you all the facts that surround, you know, each specific incidents or majority of incidents or certain topics that will allow you to formulate your own decision rather than just, you know, unfortunately, the way times are with people that just, for whatever hidden agendas or whatever thing, you know, that seem to kind of permeate around the law enforcement as a whole, and just allow you to make your own decisions. I think that's key, and the education, like you said, is huge for that.
Now, I don't want to accuse you of paying somebody, but you do have a comment here that says you're the best sergeant ever.
Here we go.
Jalen Atkins, thanks
for that. Here we go. Well, Jalen is he's my baby boy. There's a few of them, and I teach at the academy as well. So in the addition, when we, you know, we're talking about cadets, that kind of thing, I will spend as much hours teaching and training, and, you know, there's a lot of paperwork, a lot of admin stuff, but I have a great staff. I have fellow sergeants. I have fellow people behind me. I have a great lieutenant, great commander. I mean, I couldn't be happier. And we work together as a team, which allows me to not only train at the sheriff's office, but I also teach at the Georgetown Academy. So I teach defensive tactics and firearms and classroom there. So our cadets are kind of split up, one, twos, threes, and based on where they are in the structure of how that works, they're either in the academy or full-time, or they're in some type of FTEP or FTO.
Can you explain? Sometimes when we hear these acronyms, we know what they mean, but the people at home don't.
So FTEP is the field training program, which they will come to our office once they complete the academy, and once they are certified through the state of Florida with passing of the test successfully. They will enter, basically, it's a 4.5-5-week program, in which now we take all that information that they learned and then teach them how to apply it to our policies and procedures, right? So that they're effective and doing what they need to be doing successfully on the street. Then once they complete that 5-week program, they will start an FTO in which they are a trainee with a field training officer for 4 phases. And what they do is they get that instruction, and it's a gradual progress, because what people don't realize is it's very stressful. There's a lot going on. You know, at the same time, I'm trying to monitor calls for service. I'm trying to listen to what's going on. I'm trying to handle a call. I'm listening to dispatch. I'm trying to make decisions. I'm trying to apply my knowledge and what I know. And then you just throw in, you know, that these situations sometimes go from 0 to 100, it becomes very trying. So first phase, they kind of sit in the car for a period of time, and what they do is they kind of watch and observe and start to acclimate and jump in and start handling calls. Second phase, they pretty much are handling the calls, but the FTO is driving, because again, it's a, you know, adding driving into all that would be even
the FTO, the field training officer.
Yes. So by the time they hit the third phase, then they'll switch seats, and they're kind of, the field training officer is sitting back observing. He's there in case anything happens, or you know, heaven forbid, needs to intervene. But pretty much they're handling everything, including driving the car. And then in the fourth phase, they're kind of on their own, and they're being shadowed to make sure that everything's there, and you know, everything from report writing to how they handle, how they talk, how they speak, officer safety. I mean, they're still continually evaluated, and then they stay on that and finish out the rest of their probation, assigned to a shift for a year.
And that training doesn't end there. Once they graduate FTO, you guys are constantly in training. I mean, they're, I'll go looking for even a major or a captain, or, you know, all the way up the ranks, and they're in training courses. Well, I mean, that's,
and, you know, the big part of that is, you know, people would ask why, and the deal is times change. Criminal activity, criminal thought process changes. So if we don't adapt, you know, we at this agency are trying to be as proactive as we can in reaching out and helping the community, because that's the big picture, right? And yes, criminal.
the plexiglass got you.
But the big thing is yes, we want to thwart crime and do all those other things, but the big picture is overall community service. So how do we do that, right? How do we get into those communities? And some of them, obviously, there are setbacks and minor things that make it tough, but eventually, you know, with perseverance, we get there. So being a proactive agency, we're on the forefront trying to move forward to enhance that before it becomes a problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I mean, we have specialized units that receive constant training all the time, and we're, you know, doing one of them, which I was, you know, part of our gun crimes unit, the gang and gun guys. You know, they're hand in hand with narcotics and at the same time the robbery homicide unit. So working together and building networks, and, you know, it's just the continual training allows them to evolve and hopefully be better than the criminal element.
Yeah, absolutely. So we always have to keep up with that. And then the state of Florida has mandates on top of that. We have our own agency mandates and the state of Florida mandates. And
again, being accredited, like we had spoke of earlier, there's a certain requirements for us to be accredited that we have to maintain. I don't know the number, but it's well over 200 to 300 just in policies alone that we have to adhere to maintain that accreditation. So, and again, part of training is our professional standards group, which is our No Brett and Cole and you know, those guys do a fantastic job keeping us on the up and up as far as making sure our policies are in place, or if anything needs to change, it does.
Absolutely. So, also on top of that, you're kind of with the cadets too. You kind of touched on that a little bit.
So the sheriff's, and it's kind of confusing a little bit because when you apply for a deputy sheriff position or law enforcement position with the sheriff's office, you'll see the different structures, right? So basically we have the cadet ones. Those are my full-time cadets. To work at the Escambia County Sheriff's Office and carry a gun, we have to be 21. So if you're in the academy and turn 21, that's okay, right? If you're not 20, if you're just 20 when you start. But what we're trying to do, again, as part of the outreach and teach, and you know, that's a whole nother show as far as getting into and why some of these kids are doing what they're doing, because it was a big part of learning. There are so many statistics that go with certain ethnicities and all the other stuff that prohibit them from being where they are. And there's a couple success stories even with our own cadets. But that being said, those guys will stay with me until they're old enough at some point during that academy cycle to graduate, and then to 21, and then be able to carry that gun or whatever, and then continue that career. So,
and then we're getting ready to wrap up, aren't
we? I'm trying to hurry.
It's good. Well, I just want to be able to give one phone number before we go for recruiting. If you're interested in becoming a cadet or anything, you're going to call Michelle Crutchfield at 786-7115. If you have any other questions about today's show, you can always email me at pio@escambiaso.com.